Okay, today we're starting on Daf Kuf Gimel. We're going to go back a little bit, as usual, on Sunday mornings to some stuff on Kuf Bet. Read our report to the Mofer today. It's a new one. Okay. David Avram ben Miriam, Dvorah bat Dina, Orla Pnina bat Recha Frida, Yael Miriam bat Chaya, Yaakov ben Rosa, David ben Golda, Daphna Chaya bat Sara, Ilana Miriam bat Dina, Reza bat Pesha, Abigail bat Yael Esther. Liloy nishma chana bat Avram bat Tara, Tzvi Hirsch ben Yaakov Halevi Umel, Yosef ben Tzvi HaKoyen, Oz Avram Shimon ben Eliezer Chana, Eliezer Yitzchak Halevi Bachan. Okay. We're going to go back a little bit. There was a discussion on the previous page. Okay, we started with this machloka, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, if you give someone a job to do and they do it differently, right? You give them to color it red and he colors it black. Then from there, they got into a case of a shaliach who goes to buy produce and he buys something different than what you asked him to buy. And then there was a whole debate about, there were two sources. One said, this is at the very top of Kuf Bet Amud Bet. One said, if what happened was you sent him to buy you stuff and then he bought something else and then the price fluctuated. So the question is, who takes the loss? The shaliach who changed from what you asked him or the original owner who it was his stuff? So there was a machloka. There were two different opinions about it. And then they said, one opinion was, in other words, one said, if it went down, it went down for him. One second. Right. One opinion was to say, he takes a loss. The shaliach takes all of it falls on him. The loss or the gain, because shinoi is kone. If it's kone, then all he has to do is pay back the guy at the moment that he bought it. That's the original price, whatever he bought it for. So the loss or the gain is his. The other opinion said no. His yad is ala tachtona. And therefore, if it went down, it's his loss. If it went up, the gain goes to the original owner. So Rabbi Yochanan said, don't worry, there's no machloka between these. Just it's different. Well, it's not that there's no machloka. These don't contradict each other. It's that one matches Rabbi Meir, one matches Rabbi Yehuda, the opinions we saw in the Mishnah, where that was exactly the case. But then Rabbi Elazar contradicts that, and he says, no, they're both Rabbi Meir, and it was dependent on whether he was buying it for eating purposes, in which case it mattered to him whether you changed or not, or if he bought it for schora purposes, where he doesn't care what you buy as long as you can resell it, okay? And that's the difference between the two opinions, and therefore, in the case where you wanted it lachila and you bought him something different, well, then it's a shinoi and it's kone. In the other case, it's not even a shinoi at all. Okay, that's the basic machloket. It's not so critical for today to understand. I mean, it's good to understand that. But the main thing now happens is that the Bnei Ma'arava, which means the people in Eretz Israel, had a problem with the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, the first opinion. What do they say? Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, okay, they say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, how could you say that the gain goes to the... how could you say that the... Right, one second.
The gain goes to the buyer.
Right, that the gain goes to the buyer because, what do we say? That if, according, what do they claim? They say, how could you even have a sale at all? How can you say that this was a good sale and that the gain goes to the buyer? Because, what's the issue here? The guy who sold it had no idea he was selling it to the third party. Right? In other words, you have a middleman here. He thought he was selling it to the middleman, in which case, who acquired the rights? Now all of a sudden, there's this chidush. What do you mean? If the shaliach's working for you, the shaliach's working for you, right? So what do they claim? If you are selling it, if you're buying it for someone else, and you don't tell the buyer that you're selling it, the Bnei Ma'arava says that can't be a good sale. Okay? That's what they say. They say, v'chimi hodiu l'baal chitin sheikneh chitin l'baal ma'ot. Okay, in other words...
You don't tell the buyer or you don't tell the seller?
Sorry, I said the buyer, I meant the seller. Okay, the seller has to know who he's selling it to. Okay, he has to know who the buyer is in order to give the rights to the buyer. So the Gemara, they question him, what the Bnei Ma'arava, what do you mean? The case was, you had him by chitim and he bought seorim, right? But it implies that the case would only be true if he bought something different. What if he bought the same thing, right? If he bought the same thing, you would have the same problem. The seller still didn't sell his real rights to the buyer, whether it was the same thing or something different. So the Gemara answers, no. They say, because if you're doing the shlichut, then you're shlucho shel adam kemoto. And that answers our question, which everyone's like, what do you mean? The seller has to do the buyer. I mean, there's a middleman. That's exactly what the job of the middleman is, right? The middleman is supposed to function in place of the buyer. So if the seller sells the rights to the middleman, and then the middleman acquires them on behalf of the buyer, that works. But when does that work? If he does exactly what, when you say shlucho shel adam kemoto, it's because he's doing what you sent him to do. But if he's doing something different, say the B'nai Ma'arava, and he's not doing what you told him to do, then what happens? Then he can't acquire the rights for somebody else. Okay, because he's now doing a new sale. He decides to buy Sorim instead of Chitim. That's not what he was sent to do. And therefore, the seller is giving the rights to the middleman and not to the buyer. So the B'nai Ma'arava said, therefore, the buyer can't acquire rights, and you can't say that he gets the gain. That's their problem with the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? Now, in the context of this, the Gemara is going to bring a question on the B'nai Ma'arava, okay? And that's going to come from some other case entirely. And eventually, we're going to say that this case has nothing to do with it, okay? That's where we're going to go. So we're going to start 10 lines from the bottom. I think it's 10 or 9 from the bottom of Kuf Bet Amud Bet. Tanu Rabbanan, Halokeach Sadeh B'Shem Chavero, Ein Kofino Tolim Kor. Vima Marlo Almanat Kofino Tolim Kor. Now, this is going to be totally unclear what we're talking about. We'll understand in another minute. If you buy a field in the name of a friend, we don't force the friend to sell it. Okay, we don't know yet what this means. Limkor, we're going to see, doesn't really mean limkor. V'imamarlo amanakem, but if he conditioned it upon the condition that he was doing this, right, it sounds like there's a middleman here, right? Then kofino to limkor. So, again, we don't know what this means yet. My kamar, what does this mean? Amar of sheshet, hachi kamar. Halokech sademi chaviro b'shem resh galuta. Somebody buys a field in the name of the Resh Galuta. In other words, he says, I'm buying this field for the Resh Galuta. Now, the assumption here is, it means I'm buying it for the authorities, for the iria, you know, for the municipality. I'm buying it for them. Ein kofino to Resh Galuta limkor. Now, what does this mean? What's going on here? The guy is worried that they're not going to believe, right, this is, right, before, right, Rashi says here, his whole purpose is lahatil ema shelo yatzu ala asikin. In other words, what does he want? He wants to have a shtar mechira, not between him and the seller, because the seller is just a random guy. He wants to say, I'm buying it for the Resh Galuta, so that the Resh Galuta will then write him a shtar saying, and I sold you this land. Okay, in other words, he's paying for the land on the behalf of the Resh Galuta, so to speak. But it's not really. It's just so that the property can have the name Resh Galuta in between him and the seller, so that the last shtar he's going to end up with is going to say, I, the Resh Galuta, sold the land. That's, what does it mean? He's going to have a shtar with the having bought from, let's say, the municipality, rather than having bought from a random guy. If he buys from the municipality, people will say, oh, it obviously belonged to the municipality. If he buys from a random guy, someone could say, oh, you know what, that land didn't belong to him, right? They didn't have taboo in those days where everything was written down. Someone can come and claim, I mean, they obviously did have records, but he was worried maybe someone will claim that I really own this land, it never belonged to him. But they're not going to start fighting with the municipality, right? So that was his idea. So now, how does this work? If you buy a field in the name of the Resh Galuta, you can't force the Resh Galuta, now here Limkor doesn't mean to sell it in, because he bought it already with his own money. You can't force the Resh Galuta to write you that shtar. Okay? But imamar al-minat kofin et Resh Galuta Limkor. And if you did say, though, I'm buying this on the condition that the Resh Galuta will write a shtar in my name, and as I'm buying this for the Resh Galuta, on the condition that the Resh Galuta will write me a shtar, then he can force the Resh Galuta to do it. So now they say, Amar Mar, they're going to now go into this. Halokeach sadeh b'shem Resh Galuta, ein kofino to Resh Galuta limkor. Michlal, what can you imply from here? Now, what does it imply? Who owns this land? If he bought it for himself, but said, I'm buying it for the Resh Galuta. Now, the Brita says, We don't force the Reish Galuta to write him a star, that the star belongs to him, that the lamp belongs to him. So who does the lamp belong to? Belongs to the guy who bought it. We can't force the Reish Galuta. However, it does belong to him. He might not have good proof for it, but it's his. You follow? As the assumption is, we're not allowed to force the Reish Galuta to write the star, that it's his, because what does Reish Galuta have to do with this?
He used the Reish Galuta as a way to get the land.
Yes. He used the Reish Galuta, but you can't force the Reish Galuta to do it.
It was like Kavana.
Substitute.
He spent his money with the Kavana buying, purchasing the Reish Galuta, then...
No, he didn't. No, because he didn't buy it for the Reish Galuta. What did he do? He just wanted the star to be written in the name of the Reish Galuta, so later he could say, "Look, I bought this from the Reish Galuta," and not that I bought it from Joe Schmo.
He used it to protest the land.
But he bought the land, so it's obviously his. It doesn't belong to the Reish Galuta. It's just that we can't force the Reish Galuta to write this star. So what do you see here? The seller sold it to the buyer, thinking he was selling it to the Reish Galuta. Now, what did the B'nai Ma'arava say about a case like this? Who would own the land in this case? The Reish Galuta and not the buyer, because the seller has to know who they're giving the rights to. So this seems to contradict what the B'nai Ma'arava said. So Michlal de Mikne Kanyale. From here you can infer that it is Kanoi to him, it's just that he can't force the Reish Galuta to write the star. So Lema Pliga de B'nai Ma'arava. Doesn't this sound like it's their cholik on the B'nai Ma'arava? To Amre, who said, V'chimi hodiu l'bal chitin, sheyakne chitim l'bal abayit, right? What'd they say? Who told the seller that he was going to give the rights to the owner? It was, he didn't know that. So now they say no. Imi shumha lo kasha, kevan de odue l'bal sadeh, vodi inu l'sadeh. He wasn't trying to trick the seller here. What was he doing? He was trying to trick everybody else in the world. But he had told the seller, and he had told, in other words, the B'nai Ma'arava can answer, this doesn't contradict us because you can assume that in this case, he told the seller what he was up to, and there were aiding that knew. And that wasn't the issue. The issue is for the rest of the world he was tricking. But there was no trickery going on between him and the seller knew exactly who he was selling the land to. But now they say, Ala ema seifa, but there's a problem with the seifa now. Al minat kofino to Reish Galuta limkor. But if you said you conditioned it, then we can force the Reish Galuta to write the star. So now they say, amai. Now this is a separate question. Now they're just asking a question on the case in general. This doesn't make any sense. According to the way, Rav Shesha, you've explained this, that the whole thing is, can we force the Reish Galuta to write a star? Why would it make a difference if he said al minat to the seller? He says to the seller, I'm going to sell you this, I'm going to buy this land from you on the condition that the Reish Galuta will write me a star. Well, the Reish Galuta can come say to him, Belema Reish Galuta, lo yikarai chubina velo zilatai chubina. I have nothing to do with you. In other words, you're not helping me, you're not hindering me. I have nothing to do with this deal, right? You follow? He's conditioning it upon the Reish Galuta doing something, but the Reish Galuta wasn't even there. He has nothing to do with this whole esek. So how could he possibly do that? So therefore, Abaye says, so until now, let's just follow. We had a question from the way Rav Shesha explained this bright to a particular way. From the way he explained it, we had a question on the B'nai Ma'arava. We answered it up and said even the B'nai Ma'arava would, we could work it out with this case. Okay? Because this case is not a case that contradicts, because the seller and the buyer actually knew what they were doing. The seller knew what was happening. But now we're going to say this case is entirely something different. We've misunderstood, and it has nothing at all to do with the B'nai Ma'arava at all. El Amar Abai, Hachi Kamar, Halokech Sadeh B'Shem. Now here there's a Gersa. We're going to do the Gersa that it's actually B'Shem Reish Galuta. Okay? He does buy the field in the name of his friend, the Reish Galuta. Okay? Or the name of, not his friend, but the Reish Galuta, either which way. Ein Kofine Tamocher Linkor, Zimna Achrite. Now, what's the issue here? Until now we talked about that there's an issue that the buyer wants to have a star in the name of the Reish Galuta. That's still what's going on here, okay? That's one thing pulling. Now we're going to learn there's a different thing pulling on the other side. So it's motivating. What's motivating this guy who's buying it is that he doesn't want to have a star between him and Joe Schmo. He wants a star between him and the Reish Galuta. But now, what's the issue? He wants the buyer to write him a star between him and he wants the seller to write a star between the seller and the Reish Galuta, and then write a star between the Reish Galuta and himself. He wants him to basically write two shtarot. Okay? So that's what it means here. Ein kofin et hamocher limkor. Again, limkor here doesn't mean limkor. It means to write a new shtar. Zimna achrita, a second shtar. Okay, Rashi says, lachzor lichtov shtar mechira acher lalokech. Okay, shayalo lahatznotu lahodio. Now, he should have said from the beginning, write me a shtar in the name of the Reish Galuta. Now, what's the issue that's motivating the other side? The seller doesn't want to have it say that he sold land to the Reish Galuta and he sold land to this other guy, because what's going to happen? People are going to see that this guy has a lot of shtarot, even though it's the same land. He doesn't want it to appear like he sold a lot of land, because what happens if it appears that you've sold a lot of land? What does it look like? Looks like you're strapped for money. You get a bad credit line, right? Because you obviously don't have funds if you're selling property. Okay? So he doesn't want to write two shtarot because it's not going to look good. Okay? And also, one second. Right? So look at Rashi for a minute. This is what he wants. He wants that you write a shtar b'shem Reish Galuta, and then she'im yatzu asikin er elahem shehu shel Reish Galuta. And what does he want? He wants two identical shtarot, okay, that I, Ploni, am selling this land. He wants one that says I'm selling this land to the Reish Galuta, and one that says I'm selling this land to you. Why does he want this? Because he says, look at Rashi, right? One, so that if people come and start claiming that this isn't your land, I'll say, look, the Reish Galuta sold it to me. And the other one, write it in my name. And
so the heirs of the Reish Galuta don't come back and claim the land is mine.
Right, exactly. So that the heirs of the Reish Galuta won't claim it's theirs. Okay? So he's going to have two shtarot, which seems very strange, right? Because it's two shtarot saying this guy sold the land to both of them. It's a little confusing. But this way, he wants to be able to pull out whatever card he needs to prove his point. But it's not good for the other guy, because it's not good, again, it's true, it's on the same property. However, people will see there's a shtar here, there's this, right? You've sold things, and it doesn't look good. So therefore, what's it going to be? It's going to depend on what you agreed with him in the beginning. If you didn't agree with him in the beginning that you wanted him to write these two shtarot, then you can't force him to write it, because he could say, I never agreed to that, I wouldn't write that, that would put me in a weak position. But the imam marlo al minat. But if he said from the beginning and they agreed that he's going to write him these two shtarot, then kofinit hamocher limkor. You follow? Then we can force the mocher to write him the two shtarot that he demanded, because it was part of the stipulation from the beginning and he agreed to it. You follow? So now this has absolutely nothing to do with whether the seller had intent to sell to the buyer or not. Clearly, he knew what he was, right, who he was selling to. This here is a totally separate issue, which is, can you force a guy to write these two shtarot, or because it's bad for him, you can't force him unless he agreed to it originally. And therefore, it has nothing at all to do with this.
Wouldn't there be a problem if somebody saw that, oh, I see this shtar that says it was sold to the Reish Galuta, and
right,
then he
I agree.
To it's, say that,
this,
well,
the case is quite really strange, because in the end, it's going to look like... Mm-hmm. Right, it doesn't. If somebody looks at both shtarot, it's not going to make any sense to them. So I agree. But I think the idea is he wants to be able to pull out whatever card he wants to. And so he could say, look, it was sold to me. And then he could say, oh, well, look, it belonged to the Reish Galuta, so obviously it didn't belong to you. And that's what he's going to pull it out to, you know, he wants to have all the cards in his hands to be able to use what he needs when he needs it. It's a little strange. Okay, you can see already from the fact that Bayan and Rav Sheshet are struggling with this, they weren't exactly sure what the case was and what was going on. And notice how both of them understand the word limkor is not actually to sell, but to write a shtar, right? To write a shtar that doesn't actually reflect an actual sale, right? It's a little tricky, this whole braita. Okay, now we're going to ask some questions about this opinion of Abaye, the way he reads it. Amar Mar. Again, we've gotten totally off track now. We're not connected any longer to the B'nai Ma'arava. Amar Mar, halokeach sadeh b'shem chavero. Now, Amar Mar means we're going back to something we quoted before. Ein kofinet hamocher linkor zimna achrite. Right? We don't make him write two shtarot if they didn't agree in the beginning. So they say, pshita. That's so obvious. Why would you need to tell you that? Obviously, you can't force the guy to write a shtar, right, in the name of the buyer if he already asked him to say, write the shtar in the name of the seller. In the name of the Reish Galuta. So what do they say? Ma'u detema, you might have thought, Matze Amarle, Meida Yadita Ana Linaf Shai Shaklina, Upanchaya Baal Mahu de Kavina. Maybe the buyer could say to him, listen, you know that I'm really buying this for myself. Yes, it's true, you're writing a shtar in the name of the Reish Galuta, but you know that I'm buying it myself. And panchaya ba'alma hu dekabaina. What I really want to do is just have security, right, so that nobody gives me problems later. V'zuze bichdi lo shadina. Ella adate dekatzav li shtar achrina. And I'm not just giving you money, but I'm giving you money on the condition that you're going to write me this shtar. Kamash malan comes to teach you that that doesn't work. In other words, we're protecting the seller. The seller has his own interests also, and you can't force him. If you didn't stipulate from the beginning, you can't come and say, oh, well, that was what I intended. Now, even though I didn't stipulate it, that was obvious what I wanted.
But isn't it illegal for the seller to sell, to write a straw?
To write a straw that's not actually accurate?
Yeah. I mean,
right. It's a little bit strange.
He's just doing the buyer a favor, but it's illegal because he's not really selling.
Right. It does seem quite strange that he's
like
writing something
in your child's name so that you don't have to pay taxes on it. Which, I mean, it's not legal.
Right.
So it wouldn't even be a good sale.
Right. It's a little strange. That's why the first interpretation has a strength, which is that the Resh Galuta plays a factor here. They're the ones writing the shtar. Abaya's interpretation is somewhat complicated because how could you even ask him to write a shtar when it has nothing to do with him at all?
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's all sorts of things we do to, when you're selling, to strengthen the, so that the buyer has more security. So this is like a security measurement. But yes, it's a little strange. So kamash malan, da'amar lein yana avde lach bahade hahu dezavan lebishmei, v'yachtov lach shtar achrina. 1 second. Right, so Kamashmalan comes to teach you Da Amarlein Yana Avdelach Bahade Hahu Dezavat Lebishmei. In other words, I made a t'nai, right? V'yachtov lach shtar. Right. In other words, you wanted me to write in the name of the Resh Galuta. V'yachtov lach shtar achrina. In other words, your inyan is with the Resh Galuta at this point. You wanted me to write in the name of the Resh Galuta. I'm writing in the name of the Resh Galuta. If you want the Resh Galuta to write you a shtar, go take it up with him. Okay, which makes sense. Vim Amarlo, what about this other line though? Vim Amarlo al menat kofinet hamocher limkor. If you added a condition from the beginning and said, I want you to write it this way, so again it should be pshita. So why do they need to tell you that we can force him to write the shtar? So lo tzricha, why do you need it? Da Amarlahu lisade kamedi, he said to the witnesses, kamedi di chazu deshtar achrina kabiina. Okay, so in other words, they need. He said to the witnesses, in front of me, this you should see that the shtari achrina, that I want the shtari achrina. So ma'u detema, you might have thought, matze amarle, he could say to him, right, the seller could say, amina shtara meheach tekashaka bishmei ka'amarta. Right. In other words, he could say to him, "Shtar mehafta kashacha b'shmei kamarta." I agreed that you could get these two shtarot, but obviously, what I intended was what—that you would get the second shtar from the Resh Galuta. Right. Again, like Deb said, why should I be writing the shtar for you? Yes, I agreed to it, but I agreed that I'll write in the name of the Resh Galuta, and the Resh Galuta will write it in my name. So kamash malan. But now he says no. Comes to teach you what? De'amarle, you can say to him, Lahachi tarche va'amre lehu, le'edim kamach, dimi mechu de'kabi'ina. In other words, why do you think I brought witnesses in front of you? In other words, I brought you witnesses and did this whole deal and sent out a napkin so that you would be the one to do it, okay? In other words, he stipulates in front of witnesses and he does this whole thing, and then the guy says, well, it's true, you stipulate, but I assume the Resh Galuta read. And he says, no. The bride is coming to teach you if he stipulated. I went all this way to do it in front of witnesses, in front of him, this guy, in front of the seller. Obviously, his intent was that the seller would write it. Okay? So, therefore, that's the chidush there. So, again, we brought Abaya's interpretation. We said this obviously has nothing to do with the B'nai Ma'arava. Now we said both things that he says seem to be obvious. And then they say, no, it doesn't seem to be obvious because each time the guy could claim something, each side could claim something else. But that's why the halacha is the way it is, to tell you it's not the case. Okay. Now we're going to bring a ma'aseh, a case that happened. And it's going to appear that Rav goes according to the shita of the B'nai Ma'arava. Okay, which again is what? That the seller, when he sells to a buyer, he has to know that he's selling to that buyer and not to a middleman. Right? And this isn't the case where the middleman does something a little different. Okay. So now, lost my place for a second. Okay. Rav Kahana Yaev Zuza Akitna. Rav Kahana paid money for pishtan, for flax. But he didn't, we've seen this many times before, people pay for something, but they don't actually take the item at that point. Now what happens? Lisof iyakir kitna. Then, before he gets the flax, right, in the meantime, he goes to get the flax now from the guy who, from, right, Rav Kahana gave money, paid for this flax. He goes now to pick up the flax, and what happened? The price of flax went up, okay? Zavna mervate, mervate de kitna, the price of flax goes up. Says, what does the guy do? Before he gives the pishtan to Rav Kahana, he sells it, okay? And now gets more money for the flax than there was before. So now, Atza the Kameh de Rav, they go in front of Rav and they say, what's the story? Now what's the issue? Okay, so let's put it like this. You bought something from me, you gave me money. I didn't give you the flax, but what I did was, I said, you know what, you want this flax, right? But this flax is worth a lot more money now. I should sell it right now, right? Think of the stock market. I should sell it right now, and I'll give you the extra money, right? Because obviously you want the extra money, and if I wait another few days, the price might go down. So let me sell it now, and I'll make a deal for you. I'll make money for you. So Rav Kahana, what's he worried about? He's worried that when you now give me the money, you gave me 100, and I'm going to give you now 110 shekels worth back. So when I give you those 110 shekels worth back, does that look like rebate? Okay? Is it a rebate problem? Because it looks like, now again, it wasn't a loan, it was a sale, but even in a sale, there's issues of rebate, right? This happens when you pay people back, you know, there's issues. If you pay them back not the exact amount, it could look like rebate. So that's what he's worried about. So what happens? Ata l'kamei d'rav. Amar lei, mayi yavid, ezal ishkil zuzai. So he says, what's the issue? Go take the zuzim. Amar lei, iki kazabne amar hai kidne dekana hu zil shkol vi lo tishkol. Oh, sorry, wait. I think I misunderstood a minute. 1 second. Let me get it straight before I explain it. Amar Lei is what Rav Kahana said to him, right? I realized that was the answer. So Amar Lei says to him, Ma'yavid, Ezal Ishkil Zuzay, can I take the Zuzim or is it a rebate problem? So Amar Lei, Ki Kazavne, if when you sold it you said, Amre, Hai Kitna De Kahanahu, if the guy had said, right, I'm selling this flax, but this flax doesn't belong to me, it belongs to Rav Kahana, then Zil Shkol, then you can take it. Vilo, lo tishkol. But if he didn't say anything and he just sold it as if it was his own, then lo tishkol, because again, what happened? He did a shinoi, right? That was never part of the agreement. He himself is kone the revach, right? That's what the B'nai Marava said. If you don't stipulate, well, then the seller isn't giving it to the buyer. He's giving it to the guy who sold it to him. And that's his intent is important. He intended to sell it to Kahana. Then great that it goes to Rav Kahana. But if he intended to sell it to the person who actually sold it, who sold it to him, well then, sorry, it's not the seller, it's the buyer, right? If the buyer intended to give the money to Rav Kahana, then it'll go to Rav Kahana. But if he intended to give it to somebody else, the middleman, then who was the original seller, right? Then he can't acquire that money because it was never intended to be his, and then it would be a rebate problem. So, come on, kibbenei marava, da'amre, mi hu du, labal chitin, shikneh chitin labal ma'ot. Okay, so now what do they say? Atu miyav Rav Kahana arba b'shakil timna. In other words, is this the case where Rav Kahana gave 4 and got back 8? Kitna mimele hu di yakir. Migzal gazle. So now we're going to say... It has nothing... 1 second. In other words, what was the intent here? He wasn't trying to pay 4 and get 8, right? This wasn't like he bought stock in the stock market. That wasn't his intent. His intent was to get flax. So when he bought the flax, what's the assumption? The flats belonged to him. So when the guy went and, now it's true, it wasn't in his hands yet, but when the guy went and sold the flats, he was selling, it was stolen property, basically. It didn't belong to him. Now, once it's stolen property, what do we say? Right? V'tnan kol ha-gazalim mishalmim kishat ha-gzela. What does that mean? The Rav Kahana should only get back the value at the time that the guy stole it. And any profit the guy made on it, that profit goes to the guy. Right? Or in this case, oh no, sorry, it would be the opposite. Kishak Gzela, what was it worth? It was worth a higher amount. So the higher amount should go to Rav Kahana. Okay? And therefore, what does he tell him? There's no rebate problem. It belongs to you 100%. Because at the time of the theft, the flax was worth, let's say, double. So you get double. Okay? It belongs to you. You're your rightful owner. It has nothing to do with that. So now they say, Amre, Hatam Ammanahavai. V'lo mashke Rav Kahana l'kitna. Okay, so now they say, this. Now that was all assuming what? When is he called a gazlan?
If he sells it without...
Well, if there was a transfer of ownership, if there was a kinyan. Now remember, kesef is not kon and metaltalin, right? Yeah. Only land. So the fact that he gave the money wasn't enough. The assumption at first was that there was a kinyan done, okay? Like he did a meshicha or something. He picked up a handkerchief or, you know, he did something. Or he was moshech the pishtam but left it with the guy or, you know. But now they're saying, no, this wasn't, this was a shtar amana. What's an amana? Out of trust, okay? It wasn't, he actually didn't have a kinyan on it. Okay, hatam amana havai, v'lo mashche rav kahana l'kitna. He didn't do a kinyan meshicha on the pishtan. V'rav l'ta'ameda amar, rav goes l'shitato, because rav says, osin amana b'peirot, v'ein osim amana b'damim. What does this mean? You can do an amana when it comes to peirot. If I say, you know, I'm buying your stuff, we don't do an actual kinyan, so you have to give me the peirot, whether they're worth more now or whether they're worth less, I get them at whatever value they are at the time.
That's the future of the peirot. So you're buying basically the unripened fruit from the tree, and you're saying, when this fruit ripened, then I'm buying the fruit.
Okay, so it could be ripened, or it could be it's already ripe, but I'm going to buy it at a future point, whatever price it's at the time. But you can't do that when it comes to money, okay? That when it comes to, if you're giving money instead, then it's going to look like rebate, okay? Then you're going to have an issue, and it's going to look like rebate, okay? Because when it's when you're talking about paying money back, that creates more of an issue of a rebate problem. Because if you're paying actual items, so we don't generally say there's going to be rebate if there's a fluctuation of price. But if you're going to actually pay money, then it's going to be an issue. Okay, then there's going to be rebate. Okay, so now, one second. Just want to check one thing. According to, so 1 minute. According to this, in other words, it comes out, something's confusing to me because the conclusion of Rav comes out the opposite. In the first reading, we said it wasn't rebate and he could take the extra money because it was like a gazlan. The second way we read it...
This was future.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood. Futures. Okay. Okay. I have to go back 1 minute and just clarify one thing. I misunderstood the flow for a minute. What happened was, Rav said it depends whether they had intent. I forgot about, right? It was all whether they intended to sell it to Kahana or they didn't intend to sell it to Kahana, right? So now, they thought that was like B'nai Ma'arava. And then they said, no, that can't be because Rav's psak makes no sense because it should be like, they're really gazlanim. The assumption is, why would Rav have said, why does Rav say it could potentially be a rebate problem? The Gemara says it shouldn't be a rebate problem at all because it's they're basically gazlanim, right? The guy who did it is a gazlan, and he should pay, and there shouldn't be a rebate problem at all. So now the Gemara has to explain, why did they think, if he didn't have intent to say it was for Kahana, would we say that there would be a rebbe problem? Why would Rav think there would be a rebbe problem? And that's because this wasn't a case where there was an actual kinyan and it's a gazlanu case. It's not that. If it was that, then Rav's talk wouldn't make any sense. That's where I misunderstood. I'm sorry. So that's how we get, right? So therefore, Rav's psak must be based on something else. And then they say, ah, it's because Rav goes l'shitato and that this, you thought it was a kinyan, there really wasn't a kinyan. And because it wasn't a kinyan, this was a shtar manah. When it comes to, you know, if he had given them back the flax and the flax is at a higher rate, that would have been fine. But because he sold it and now he wants to give him money, that's not allowed. When you do the actual kinyan, that's when you give the value of whatever, in other words, it was, when you agreed upon it, even if the price fluctuated at the time of the actual kinyan. Okay, so therefore, he doesn't allow him to take the payment if they hadn't intended it to be for Kahana. Now, if they had intended it to be for Kahana, why does that work? I guess the assumption is because he was just acting as a shaliach for Kahana at that point. And that's why it would work and it's not rebbe. But if he didn't say, I'm acting on behalf of Kahana as a shaliach, then we're going to have the issue. And then we're going to say it looks like it's rebbe. Okay. New Mishnah. Hagozel et chavero shvei pruta. Vinishbalo. Okay, before we even get here, let's look at the sheet. I brought in the psukim. Okay, there's psukim in Vayikra Perek Hey, psukim kaf aleph to kaf vav, where it talks about if somebody swears falsely, okay, this is going to be background to today. Somebody does a, okay, we'll read the psukim and I'll explain it. Nefesh ki techta umala mal b'ashem. Okay, he does something wrong against God. What is it against God? Though here it's really ben adam l'chaviro. And then it's going to turn into ben adam l'makom. We'll see in a minute. B'chichesh ba'amito b'pikadon b'tsumet yad o b'gazel o ashaket amito. He lies about a pikadon that someone gave him. He says, you never gave that to me. I don't know what you're talking about. Or I returned it. Or when he really didn't. Or he stole something and lies about it and said, I didn't steal it. O ashaket amito. Or he doesn't pay, he says, I paid you your salary. And he really didn't. Or he found someone that belonged to someone and he says, I didn't find it. Binishbala sheker. Here it gets to God now. And he swears falsely in the name of God. Now if he comes and admits that he lied, okay, now if he comes and says, listen, I feel bad about this, I lied. Beheshivat hagzela asher gazal, or to oshak asher ashak, or to pikadon asher avkado to ito. So what does he do? He has to return the item that he stole or claimed was his or whatever it might be, or the salary he claims he didn't pay, or the avidah. Or anything he swore falsely about. Okay, now he has to add chomesh, right, which we've learned is really a quarter, not a fifth. La'asher hu lo yitnenu biyom hashmato. Now here comes the key. He has to give it to the person who it belonged to, okay, which should have been obvious already, right? Why does it specifically add those words? B'yom ashmato, on the day he admits it. And then the next stage is, not that's not enough. Not only does he return the item, plus the chomesh, ve'et ashamo yavi l'ashem, ayal tamim min atzom be'erkacha l'ashem el ha-kohen. Then he has to bring a korban asham. It's called an asham gzelo. Okay. And then he gets, you know, he's good. He gets a clean slate from God. Okay, so now let's go to the Mishnah. Hagozel et chavero shvei pruta. He steals something a shavei pruta. Vinish balo. And then he swears that he didn't steal it. And then he admits that he did. So he wants to return it. What does he have to do? Yolichenu acharav lemadai. Even if it's far as Madai, okay, a faraway place, right? Parasu Madai. Even if it's as far as Madai, he has to go and get it to him. Meaning, even if you now have to spend money to get there, travel expenses, you have to give them to the guy. Okay, that's very important. Lo yitain, lo lebeno, velo leshlucho. You can't give it to anybody else. What will happen if you do? You will assume responsibility until it actually gets to his hands. Right, as opposed to, normally we say, zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. So if you give something on behalf, right, to someone, on behalf of someone else, and you say, listen, I'm giving you this money to give as a gift to so-and-so, as soon as that person, the shliach, gets the gift, since it's a zchut for the mekabel, he's zocha immediately, and then the achrayut falls on the, you know, it's his. If he loses it, tough luck. But in this case, it's going to be a chov for the person because until he gets back his lost item, if something happens along the way, that's not going to be very good for him. And therefore, it's a chov and ein chavin la'adam shelo b'fanav. And therefore, you can't You can't basically give it to this guy and be zocha for him because it's not in his best interest. So therefore, you have to give it to him. And this is learned from the pasuk, right? The words, la'asher hu lo yitnenu. You have to give it to him, okay, directly, not through someone else. Aval, now here the assumption is, but if there's really no way to do this, let's say he's really far away and you really can't get there, or there's a place, I can't remember if it says in the Gemara, or the Mefreshim said that if it's going to cost you more than the item itself to get there, okay, the travel expenses are so high, you're still not worth 100 shekels, and to get there it's going to cost you 1,000 shekels, then you have an alternative. What's your alternative? Notein l'shlech beitin. Okay, you can give it to a shlech beitin, and they can assume responsibility. Okay, not a regular middleman, but a beitin. Ve'im met, yachzir liyorshav. And if the guy dies, then you have to give it to his yorshim. Okay, there's a bit of a debate about what this means. I'm not going to, about what's the chidush. Maybe that he has to find them also. There's a few other options, but we'll move on. Natan lo et hakeren, ve'lo natan lo et hachomesh. Machalo ala keren velo machalo ala machalo natal. If he gives him the keren and he doesn't give him the chomesh, and the guy is machalo ala keren velo machalo ala chomesh, or machalo al ze ve al ze, chutz mi pachom mi shava pruta bekeren, eino tzarich leilech acharav. As if he gave him part of it, he gave him the keren but not the chomesh, and or the guy was machalo ala keren but not ala chomesh, or he was mochalo on both. But for he said, I'll be mochel on you for less than a shavar pruta. In other words, said, on a little amount, I'll be mochel you. Then he doesn't have to leilech acharav. But if natano et hachomesh v'lo natano et hakeren, or machalo al hachomesh v'lo machal, if he gave him the chomesh and he didn't give him, sorry, I didn't explain that right. Let me go back. Sorry. I didn't explain that. I'm getting pressured of time. Okay, let's go back. He gives him the keren, but he doesn't give him the chomesh, okay? So now, whether he's machalo ala keren or machal velo machal ala chomesh, or he's mochalo al zeh mizeh chutz mishaver pruta bekeren, eino tzarich leilech acharav. In other words, if all that's left is a small amount of the chomesh, in other words, because what happened, right? He gave him the chomesh. He gave him the keren. But did it? Okay, sorry, I'm not reading this well. Let's start again. He gives him the keren and doesn't give him the chomesh. Okay? So that already, once he pays the keren, let's do each case by case, then he no longer needs to go to the guy to find him. He can pay nivetur shaliach. It's just the chomesh payment. If the guy was mochel on the keren and not the chomesh, okay, meaning he said, I don't care if you don't pay me back the keren, then also he doesn't have to lay chacharav. It's all about the keren. Or if he was mochel both, but said, I'll be mochel you on a little bit of the keren. In other words, a small amount, less than shavar pruta, he can be mochel him on that, and he doesn't have to go leilech acharav, as long as he gave back the rest of it. Okay, but if natan lo et hachomesh, and he didn't give him the keren, and even if the guy was mochel on the chomesh, but not on the keren, or he was mochel on both, chutz mi shavar pruta bekeren, but he said, you still have to pay me, I'll be mochel you on everything except for a shavar pruta of the keren, then even for that little shavar pruta, he still has to return the whole thing. Okay? Natan lo et hakeren, v'nishba lo al hachomesh, hareza mishalem chomesh. If he gives him the keren, and then swears about the chomesh, okay, he pays him the keren, right, and then nishbalo, and then, all right, and then he swears that what? I paid you the chomesh already, but he really didn't. And then he comes forward and admits, well, you know what? I really didn't pay you the chomesh, okay? Hareza mishalem chomesh al chomesh, okay? He keeps paying a fifth on a fifth, right? This is like half-life. Ad she is me'eta karen mishavar pruta, until it's such a small amount that it's even less than a shavar pruta, the karen, right? The karen, which is now the chomesh, which turns into the karen. The chaim b'pikadon, same thing with the pikadon. Shneamar o b'pikadon o b'tzumiyad o b'gezel o ashakat amito matzav v'idav v'cheshba mishpal asheker reza mishalem karen b'chomesh v'asham. All this applies for all of these things. Okay, tov. You know, we'll stop here because we'll get into tomorrow. The whole question tomorrow is going to be, who does this mishnah go like? Okay, in other words, we have a case where someone's supposed to pay back. And what the Mishnah says is, you had this case with the Nishba. There's two different ways of returning a Gzela. There's a guy who never swore I didn't steal it. It's just, right, he steals something, and then he comes forward and says, I stole something, without having sworn. This whole sugya doesn't relate to him. And then there's a case where he swears. Now, once he swears, that's why I said, it started out between him and man, and it moves into between him and God, because of the Shavuot Sheker. And then he has all these additional halachot of the Keren. Remember, Gazlan doesn't pay anything additional to just the Gzela. The guy who swears has to pay the Keren, the Chomesh, and now we learn this halacha that he needs to go, right, La'asheret nenu no'vatan, that he has to go all the way and find him. Tomorrow we're going to see a machlok at Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva about a bit of a different case. And the question is going to be, are they talking about a swearing case and not a swearing case? And then we're going to have three different options as to which opinion matches the opinion in our Mishnah. Okay, we're going to say one, then we're going to say the other, depending on what the machloket is about, nishba or not nishba. And then we're going to actually, the third is going to say this machloket is a totally different machloket than our Mishnah, and you can't actually, right, they would both agree with our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is just a different case. Okay, so that's going to be the tomorrow. Okay. I'll try to catch up later this week.